that I was going to ride my motorcycle today, hence the boots and the jeans, and that didn't work out because when I backed out the bike out of my garage and, you know, I'm all dressed and stuff, and then I turned it on and the battery was dead. So it was like, like that. It was one of those things. So ran back in the house, you know, grabbed a different jacket and came running back into the car and made it in time, which is, of course, we do. But on the way here, I was thinking, and I have three different talks in that binder. I try to write a different talk for each center that I go to because each congregation is different, and I'm different every time. And so Bill wrote that lovely, lovely thing, and it's such a great title as well. But and that talk is in there. But actually, I'm going to do one that is more about faith today. And it's actually for Unity. I'm speaking in Clemson next Sunday, and they might get this one. But so this one is called Spring is Just Around the Corner. I did a little bit of it last week, but and so it's not as prepped as the other one, so please just kind of go with me on that. But I was really sick last week as well, and during that time I was really bored. You know how you just lay there and you don't even want to watch TV, so I thought I would cut my hair. And a friend of mine who's a stylist said, there is nothing I can do with that except shave your head. And and I said, okay, it wouldn't be the first time that I've had my hair quite this short, but not for the same reason, you know. And so you can still see a little hole here, and that's what happens when you're sick. But she said, at that time, she said, have a little faith because it's going to grow back out. Right, and that's kind of where this comes from. So it's, you know, have a little faith, or spring is right around the corner. And the thing about that is that it sounds like a strange thing to say in September when you're living in North Carolina, but you have to remember I was raised in Bemidji, Minnesota, which is just a couple hundred miles south of the Canadian border. So we do start saying, don't worry, spring is right around the corner. I remember trick-or-treating in the snow sometimes, that it would snow on Halloween in the old days. You know, it doesn't snow till February, but back then we would have, you know, 6-foot snowbanks by the end of November, by Thanksgiving sometimes. And so this little thing I've had forever, and it's from an old cartoon, but it says, much to their delight, spring was just around the corner. And you can see, and I know by the letterhead on this, that I've had it since the mid-80s. And it's a couple of rabbits, and they're fighting the wind and the snow. And right around the corner, they're pushing their way into spring. And I love this. And it still hangs on my office wall, but I thought I would put it with this talk. So as I get older, it seems like winter never ends. And sometimes it seems that the troubles in my life never end as well. Like I go from one to the other, and sometimes I live in more drama than others. But in December of 1981, let me just say, Minnesota, I was living in Minneapolis, and we had a 2-week cold snap where it was 40 below. For 2 weeks, and I decided at that time I was leaving. And that happened over Christmas of 1981. And in, my birthday is in 82, and at that point, someone asked me if I would drive their pickup truck to California for them. They had recently moved, and they needed some assistance. And I was like, boy, you bet. So in February, another friend and I, who'd never been out of Minnesota, really, drove, and I said, we're going straight south. She wanted to go the northern route for some weird reason in February, and I'm like, we're going straight south to Texas. And so we did. And when I ended up going, as we were going across the southern states in the southwest, I hit New Mexico, and I knew that that was where I was going. I knew that this would be my new home. And in June of that same year, I moved to New Mexico. So I know also that that was the first time in my life that I felt hope. I was 4 years sober. I had been living in Minnesota my whole life. I lived on the streets many times, and I got sober in 78. And but this was the first time I really felt hope, and I was in New Mexico at that time. And so sometimes I know that hope is a radical act. Sometimes it's a second wind, and sometimes it's just an increased awareness of goodness in our life, something that enlarges our perspective of the world. So spring is just around the corner, is really that talk about faith and hope and knowing that and having that internally in the face of adversity. So what is hope? Let's start there. I hope you are well. I hope I see you again soon. I hope things work out for you. I hope things work out for me. And these type of banal statements don't really give much in the way of definition. And yet we use them all the time. In reality, hope is the life force that keeps us going and gives us something to live for. Hope is a crucial aspect of dealing with life's issues and the problems in maintaining resilience in the face of adversity. Even a glimmer of hope that our situation will turn around is enough to keep us going. And those things can seem bleak. We can lose hope. And when we run into constant resistance and we are prevented from reaching our goals, we can start to feel like there's nothing to live for. So if we can't get to where we want to be and do what we want to do and we don't feel in control of our lives, then what's the point, is that question. And so how do we face adversity? Do we stand up to it with hope or with pessimism? How do we envision our future when we are faced with a loss or bad news, such as a divorce, or when a friend is diagnosed with cancer, as which has happened to me recently? Many of you know Lisa Rose. She's spoken here, and she's in the process of transitioning with a fast-moving cancer, and she asked me to tell you all hello and to tell you that she loved you all. So, and knowing that she's on her path, she has the most alive, brilliant, insightful eyes at this point in the times I have ever known her. I see her, it's almost scary, the clarity that she has going on inside of her right now. And that gives me hope. So, with so much going on in our country and the world, we have children in cages still, and we have threats of bombs, and we have active shooters, and we have overt racism and discrimination, climate change, fear of war, and these are just simply times, sometimes, that it's difficult to have hope that something is going to change. Annie Lamott, last October, in National Geographic, gave us an idea of what we can do when we feel powerless. And she said, we take action. We go to soup kitchens. We do creek restoration. We do mentoring. And then the insight follows when we give that away. Because when we show up, we give hope to others. And by giving hope to others, she says, I'm guaranteed that hope is present. And then it floods my soul. She continued, she said, hope for me is not the religious-looking fingers of light that slant through the clouds or the lurid sunrise. It's a more sturdy garment, like an old shirt, a reminder that I've been here before and that I have survived. I loved that. It's the last line of what she said is this that makes all the difference. All I have to do is stay grounded in the truth. And so this is what I think is the difference between hope and faith. I think hope is a dream that can get us to the path. But faith is the truth. It is the knowing that we arrive and that we will arrive. Hope is important to the journey, yet faith is paramount to reach the destination. That's what I've decided. I know about Moses, but I really didn't know about Moses. I was raised in Lutheran, you know, Calgary Lutheran Church. And in my Lutheran Sunday school upbringing, it seemed to me that Moses parted the Red Sea, they made it across, the soldiers died, the sea closed in, and then there they were in the desert again. I don't really recall anything about Moses really after that, except now doing this work and reading for my ministerial degree, you know, my ordination, and prepping for all of these talks, I find out that he didn't make it to the Promised Land. I did not know that. I didn't know that Moses didn't make it. I thought he led everyone to the Promised Land, and there they were. But that's not. And after everything he went through, all that he did, parting the Red Sea, bringing water out of stone, bringing the commandments down, talking with burning bushes, Moses didn't make it to the Promised Land. And that makes me sad and just a little bit fearful, because seriously, if Moses can't make it, then what chance do I have? That's kind of like where I was a couple weeks ago. And according to Addington, in his fabulous book, it's a fabulous book, The Hidden Mysteries of the Bible, throughout all of those experiences and getting the children of Israel out of Egypt, the faith of Moses never wavered. He had what we might call a radical reliance on spirit or on God, and God did not fail him through his travels. Only once was Moses a bit cynical, he failing to give spirit credit for a miracle. And this is what seems to have kept him out of the Promised Land. According to the Bible, Moses died at 120 years old. He could look across Jordan and see the Promised Land, but he couldn't go in. Whatever that parable means to you, for me it means that we're all seeking the Promised Land. And sometimes in our doubt or in our cynicism, we have more of a struggle to get across that river or to get there. This is the place where we find comfort. This is the place where we find love. And it's the peace inside of us which never wavers and is always there if we seek it. It's a place in our consciousness. It's a state of mind. And the parable of Moses reveals to us what happens to our own psyche when we doubt or we question divine process itself. There are times when all of us forget whatever power we demonstrate in faith. It dissolves when we begin to take credit for the things that are really happening in our life, when we know that those things are spirit-given. It's a causal argument. And sometimes it's just simply not the truth. We think something happens because of something we did or the way we prayed or because of our faith like that. And so we think that's why these things happen. But that's not, it's just, again, it's a causal argument. Sometimes I wonder just how much faith I have. I feel like there are times I feel so alone in the world, so separate from others and what we are doing, and I wonder why we feel so alone. Everything is going so well, and I begin to doubt, and I give credibility to my fears. And my life theme starts running through my head. I'm alone, and I'm lonely. I'm getting old. I worry about money. I worry about how to make my ends meet. And Ernest Holmes speaks directly to this in the Science of Mind textbook, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, if we are without friends, if we are without opportunity, we should be sure to erase those thoughts from our mind and from our consciousness and pour in faith, pour in the opposite thought. We must maintain a consistent, positive, aggressive mental attitude in the truth. And when we take it and when we make it to mourning, and sometimes that mourning might come days later, our hope is renewed. And we feel stronger in what we know to be the truth in our faith. we feel stronger in our faith. And this is what I try to remember in those times. Regardless of the circumstances, omnipresent spirit does not relegate for big or small. God does not deliver punishment or give us presents. We create those things based on our behavior and our belief system. It is the law that we work with, and it is the law which impels us with the urge to express. It's our choice. And the law ultimately brings to us what we express into it. Holmes says, divine law does not decide if electricity warms a house, cooks our food, or electrocutes a criminal. Divine law itself does not distinguish whether we express life kneeling in ecstasy or laying drunk in a gutter. There is one power in the universe, and it is the same power that causes the sun to rise, the tides to change, birds to fly, and humans to express emotion. We must recognize that everything we do is an expression of consciousness and awaken to the fact that our experience is our state of consciousness objectified. Priest Henry Nouwen wrote, "To live a spiritual life, we must first find courage to enter into the desert of our loneliness and to change it by gentle and persistent efforts in a garden of solitude." This requires not only courage, but strong faith. Sometimes our hope lies with others, those that go before and light the way. Those people might be celebrities, ministers, teachers, friends, or family. And it's also this very congregation that sits here today that'll share food in just a little bit and talk to each other about what's going on in our lives. John Lennon said, "Everything will be okay in the end, and if it's not okay, it's not the end." So spring is just around the corner in everything that we do. It is inherent in every challenge that we face. This has always been true. It is the truth of God. And when we decide to have hope, then with faith, we will find our way home. Namaste.